usually, teams that compete at the UEFA Champions League knockout stage have history. Sometimes history repeats itself, like what Bayern Munich did to Arsenal. Sometimes new history is made, like what happened between PSG and Barcelona, Real Madrid and Manchester City. But what always happens is the better teams win. Welcome back to CGTN Sports Talk. I am your host, Li Xiang, and I'm glad to be joined by my colleague, Josh Embargup, here.
Great to be back.
Yeah. So, City, their hope of winning the UEFA Champions League title is ruined by Real. Last time they met, it was in the semifinal of the Champions League last season, and City won by a lot. So, what do you guys think that changed this time that made this into a, different result?
Last season we could see the gulf between the two teams. City absolutely, dominated, especially the second leg. If you look at just the game as a whole yesterday, City dominated in a very similar way. I mean, they created quite a few chances and they really should have scored more if you look at it from their perspective. But, there's another way of looking at the game, which is that, there were different phases. The first phase, I would say, was the first 12-15 minutes when, Real scored at around 12-13 minutes. And after that, City obviously were chasing the game. And it was a lot about game management, which Real have been really good at, over the last few years, and especially Carlo Ancelotti with his experience. They really showed that, they are really good at managing games at this level, big games like this. And we saw City create quite a few chances after conceding that opening goal. And Real were under so much pressure. And at one point I thought when it was halftime, it's only a matter of time when City are going to score. And they did score. Mm. But then again, after conceding that goal, after conceding that equalizer, it was another different phase of game where, Real didn't really allow City to dominate in the way they did in the previous hour. De Bruyne did have the chance at around, 80, 85 minutes. But apart from that, they didn't really have a very clear-cut chance. And in fact, Rudiger, who had that chance in extra time. So Real were able to find some openings. So they really knew how to, sit back and, control the spaces and when to try and unlock City's defense. So I think if you look at the game as a whole, of course, City dominated, but I think Real were the smarter side yesterday.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely, because I think it was really interesting watching this. Is it reminded me of Pep, I'll go back about a decade plus, I guess, however long ago it was when Ibra was brought into Barcelona for him to be there. And you get this feeling with Pep that they play this game with the idea of possession comes before everything else, which is fine when you are incredibly dominant. But when you're one goal down, which puts you down overall on aggregate, suddenly there's a level of desperation to your small movements, your passing triangles, your forward momentum. And then Haaland was brought in to give impetus to all of that. And yet when he is there in a game like this, where you're playing against someone with a very strong defense. We have, Fernandes and Rudiger as your centre-backs. They just blocked him out all game, and suddenly they couldn't figure it out. So from the very beginning almost, basically since that Rodrigo goal, it was like City were playing with 10 men and really, really struggling. And, I felt it was also quite obvious that in terms of, the total differences in managerial philosophy, you look at that Rodrigo goal where it came in from just a long ball over the top. Whereas with Manchester City, last time around in the first leg, most of their goals came up from screamers launched outside the box, just blasted in when someone got some space. Even last year, that's what Kevin De Bruyne, for me, had one of the best goals of the year because he did the same thing. This time, it's like they were just trying to walk the goal in and they were really, really struggling to do anything in the final third. While it seemed like all Real had to do was just allow a few people like Camavinga to track back, or even sometimes Rodrigo out on the wing, just clutter up the box. And then you're forcing De Bruyne and Grealish and Foden, everyone really struggling to get things together, when the reality is if they would just have a bit more, not even just like a plan B, just a bit more flexibility in what they do, they really could have got something out of those early chances, like you were saying, Barget. But instead, it was like Pep is committed to his philosophy, whereas Carlo has seen it succeed last year. He's seen it do pretty well in the last game out, but knows how to bend and bob and weave and do what has to be done. And that's how he ends up taking it to the penalties. And then among those, Bernardo Silva might have had the worst penalty I've seen in my entire life. And if it wasn't the worst, it was by Mateo Kovacic. So, I feel like the lack of flexibility in City let them down, whereas just the smarts and the nous of Real is what got them through.
That's true. I mean, this is it's just remarkable, because earlier I was talking to Obarga. This was because Real were definitely very invested in defense. And the whole process of the second leg game, it reminded me of, and when you mentioned that it's signature obsession of Pep with domination and control of the pace and ball possession, that just reminded me of what happened between Barcelona when he was the manager of Barcelona and Inter Milan with Jose Mourinho, because they met in the group stage. They beat Inter Milan with no difficulties, and then they met again in the semifinals. Inter Milan were like, we don't care about offense. We just didn't want you to score. And then they knock out Barcelona. We combine the Champions League from last season to this season together. This is more like, yeah, Pep and City, they beat Real in the semifinals last time. And this time they met Ancelotti, learned his lesson. And he used the way of Jose Mourinho to beat Pep and City again. Actually, I was watching the highlights for a period of time, I was like, is it really Ancelotti, or is actually Jose Mourinho sitting on the bench or standing along the court to actually give the game? Because this reminded me of how Pep and his philosophy were defeated multiple times.
Well, it's funny you say that, because with Pep, the amount of times I've seen him talk about his philosophy and working through the channels, moving up the half spaces, maintaining like an overlap on the wings, so you always have pressure. And like, there's so many different videos and interviews and things out there from talking about his philosophy. With Carlo Ancelotti, a guy who's won the Champions League with two separate teams, he's won all kinds of stuff, he's been a success everywhere he's been. The only time I've ever seen him say anything along those lines is in an advertisement for like Audi, when he was there by Munich, and he had a sponsor, and they asked him, like, how does your philosophy match with the philosophy of Audi? And the gist of it was that he, as a team, he keeps a solid defense because he allows everything else just to flow as it wants to. And that's it. That's basically all I've ever heard. And yet here we are on the verge of him going through to the next round, where, yeah, PSG, as they stand, a little bit formidable, but as they stand, they are by far the best team in the tournament right now, and managed by a guy whose philosophy is just play and have a go.
Yeah, that's true. Because I'm not trying to say that Ancelotti. Actually, I want to ask, because people always say, oh yeah, who's the greatest manager in the world? It's Alex Ferguson. It's Jose Mourinho. It's Pep Guardiola. But Ancelotti has won so many things. Has he ever appeared to any of those talks? And philosophy for Pep is always, I have the game, every detail in my control. For Ancelotti, of course, it's not what he said, but I think his philosophy is easy. I'm here to win with the players I have. Unlike Pep, that, okay, I need that guy, I need this guy. It takes years for him to form a lineup to work. And Ancelotti just went to Real, okay, you have this. Let me think. After one season, I can assemble them into a very powerful unit, and it worked. Just saying that Ancelotti now seems to be a more suitable choice for a club that wants to win sooner, that because he doesn't need that long time.
Yeah, I think he's the master of adaptability. I mean, you have seen. I was just, like thinking back about that AC Milan side that won in 2007. Barring Kaká, most of the core players in that squad in their early to mid 30s, and he went to Old Trafford and United won that game, that first leg 3-2. But they absolutely tore apart that defense, and especially in the second leg with United, with all those youthful players, with Ronaldo, Rooney and all these star players. I mean, they were absolutely no match. And that was one of United's finest squads probably of all time. And, you know, so he could. And AC Milan that season in the league, I think they were third or fourth. They were struggling, not getting those wins at home, really struggling for results in the league, but they really managed to get the best out of their best players in the Champions League. And that's what Ancelotti is good at, especially in tournaments like this, the Champions League. He knows how to get the best out of his players. If it's a two-legged tie, he knows how to manage games like we saw yesterday. And that game management aspect of his is what really I feel makes him, definitely brings him into the greatest of all time conversation.
That's true.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you compare him to, like, I'd say Pep here, where Pep's always struggled in the Champions League because he is willing to look at the big picture of a Premier League, a Bundesliga, La Liga, kind of find like a ratio of, say, points per game, and is willing to, like, for example, the game against Arsenal a few weeks ago, that was very much like a calculation from both him and Arteta, who is his protege. That, like, okay, in terms of how we can basically minimize losses, as long as we play to this particular standard and keep it a draw, everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in a knockout tournament like the Champions League. So that's where Carlo's ability to game manage comes in and has proven successful time and time again.
Yeah, that's true. And for Arsenal, they were not in the Champions League for, 7 years until this season? They were not in the quarterfinals for a longer time. And they were not in the semifinals or even longer time. So for Bayern, it's a one-goal loss. It's not big, but it's still kind of, I don't know, I feel bad for Arsenal for going so far this season in both the Premier League and the Champions League. But in the past week, it looks like their hopes for the two trophies were just blown.
Absolutely. I mean, they both these games against Villa and against Bayern, they have not really played well. Arsenal fans will, of course, be disappointed. There has been progress, of course, these past two seasons. They have made tremendous progress under Arteta. But, I mean, just looking back at yesterday's game, I didn't really see at any point of time Arsenal threatening Bayern. Bayern were by far the better side. I mean, right from the starting phases of the game, when Mazraoui had that chance from right across the face of the goal, and then we saw couple other shots hitting the post, Guerrero with one of those. And Arsenal didn't really threaten at any point of time, especially in that first half. And my feeling was that, okay, once they went down, okay, now we're going to see more of Arsenal, but they never really managed to threaten. And probably towards the end, the best chance was that run by Gabriel Jesus, which was not even a half chance, because the chance basically went away as soon as it took the touch, because of his first touch. So they didn't really threaten Bayern at any point. They were the second best team throughout all night. But again, I mean, this has been a lot of progress for Arsenal if you take the context of the past 7-8 seasons into account. So of course they'll be disappointed, but I think they should take all these things into account and prepare for next season. And the league is obviously still there. They are 2 points behind, but they're still in the title race, and that's where they should focus on now.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, this return to Europe, they haven't won a game away, and even when they are in it, they look like they're really struggling. Like, the question domestically has always been something along the lines of, do they need a striker? And the answer has been no, because they've always seemed to make it work with Martinelli and Saka out on the wings. And now that Arteta has got Kai Havertz kind of functioning as a, not quite a number nine, not quite a number 10, just kind of floating through the middle, it's felt like it's been flexibility that's worked. But towards the end of the season, we've seen basically that these players have just been ground into dust. They're always a little bit too slow, a little bit too sloppy now, because it's a condition where, like, if Saka isn't there, the right wing is just gone for that team. So they are now in this position where they have this really great starting squad, but Arteta doesn't really know how to rotate his players well or provide other opportunities. I mean, when I was watching this game, I was thinking to myself, there's a really big difference between this and between what was happening with Bayer Leverkusen in the past few weeks, where I forget who they were playing against, but they went 1-0 down, and then they ended up getting two back very quickly on the bounce. And it was like, the amount of variety they had going forward was incredible. Sometimes they're going low, going high, power shots, trying to get things in from set pieces on the corner, even though they haven't had the ball go out of position. So many different options. With Arsenal, it feels like they have the option of basically what can these players particularly do. Be it Saka out there on the right, being nimble, being able to score goals, being able to cross in. But if he's not there and he's not functioning, they don't have a plan B for him or Martinelli or anyone. The midfield is the most exciting part of this with Declan Rice and Odegaard. But then, you know, when you're doing that against a Bayern squad who, not a good Bayern squad by any means, but they still have Thomas Tuchel on the sidelines, who, again, kind of like we mentioned with Carlo Ancelotti, is very focused on getting his backline strong and then pushing out from it. They were constantly having to deal not just with, say, Kieran Dyer, Matthias De Ligt, but like Konrad Leimer as well, who's much more of like a holding midfield, because they're so, when the Arsenal were so unable to get the ball forward, they were just kept running into brick walls and having the ball circle around from them. And kind of like I was saying previously with that first goal from Real Madrid, it was just like a through ball over the top. The way that Bayern got this goal from Joshua Kimmich, like Rafael Guerrero was out on the, he's recovering a ball in the box, and he just saw a space and played it in, knowing full well Kimmich would get there. And that kind of flexibility, that kind of commitment to just trying new things, is what took Bayern over the top ever so slightly. It is only a 1-0 win, but they're at home and it's enough. Whereas Arsenal just kept running into a brick wall, circling around, and that was it. It was really dispiriting from a team that's meant to be on the verge of winning the Premier League and becoming, you know, meant to be a whole new era for this squad.
That's true. For Arsenal, it's interesting because I remember before this season, Arsenal were not a serious contender for the Premier League trophy or anything else for many years, because they usually just tripped in March, February, or January in 1 month, and then whatever they were working for was gone. But this time, they were in the top race for a lot of things, and they still tripped in only two games within 1 week, and then everything was gone. This is more like a message to Arsenal. It's like, welcome back to the top race. Now you have way less room to make a mistake. Loss to Bayern Munich and the loss to Villa is their lesson. So for Bayern, it's a very disappointing season, apparently. But is this going to be a season saver to win over Arsenal? I'm not saying they're going to win the Champions League title so early. And also, it's not going to convince Tuchel or the top office to let him stay. But is Tuchel actually better at, say, managing the club for a tournament instead of a much longer league season?
Well, I mean, we saw him at Chelsea winning the title. So there is, of course, precedence that he tends to do well in tournaments like this. But, I mean, you look at the motivation. I mean, compare the motivation between the two sides yesterday. Of course, Bayern had a lot at stake because this is the only tournament they're alive in. And they cannot afford, to lose. If they do, it's basically season over. And no, at the same time, even though, Tuchel is going away, he would want to go away with something to show for his time at Bayern. Of course, I mean, the season has not been very good. But I think it can be a season saver if they win. But just reaching the semifinals probably won't be enough, because Bayern have been the Bayern fans have been used to, you know, having a trophy every season. So just reaching the semifinals definitely won't be enough. Real Madrid will be a big challenge. Two very big sides, and you know, a side that will be high in confidence after beating City. So yeah, that's going to be a challenge. Let's see. But if they don't beat Real Madrid, I don't think they can call it a season saver.
True.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, it is really all or nothing. And knowing full well that Real Madrid are next, that's a really tough battle that they're going to have. And even then, I'm not really sure it will be enough, simply because this was meant to be, you know, Thomas Tuchel stayed as a free agent with the idea of this is the dream job, the one he's always wanted. They specifically ruined Julian Nagelsmann's time to get him in. And instead, it's produced the season where they've lost the league the fastest, where they've been eliminated from the Pokal to, I forget who it was who did it, but it was a very much a low-league team. They've kind of got through here. But again, like I say, this Arsenal team have really struggled internationally, regardless of who it is. Like, they lost that first one against Porto. Porto aren't exactly giants of the competition. So I don't want to say the flatters to deceive, but if they were on the other side of the bracket and they were drawing PSG or even Borussia Dortmund, a team who did beat them in the Clásica a few weeks ago, I'd probably give them way more of a chance than I would against Real.
That's true. For Barcelona and PSG, their history, I believe, is like richer than any of those that the other six clubs have with each other. When PSG lost in the first leg, it was like, because it reminded people what happened between them, you know, that 4-0 win and then 1-6 loss. So this time, is it PSG that finally, you know, without certain two players, that finally became a team that can win?
Well, to be honest, I've not really been that convinced by PSG. Of course, they won against Barcelona, but I think it had more to do with Barcelona shooting themselves in the foot. And I was just watching the Gundogan interview after that game, and he was refreshingly honest about the game. He's essentially admitted that it was a mistake by Araujo to, you know, concede that foul and get sent off, which was, I mean, quite contrasting to how Xavi responded, because he said it was an error by the referee. It was very silly the way he conceded that foul, and after that it was all PSG throughout that game. Before that it was a completely different ball game, and after the red card, PSG of course dominated proceedings. And I think it was that Gundogan shot that hit the post in the second half, that was the only major chance that Barcelona managed to create throughout the rest of the match. I felt it was very predictable, especially after Dembele scored that first goal. You kind of knew that this is how it's going to turn out. They just need to convert one of those chances and Barcelona are done for. And I'd say Barcelona played poorly rather than PSG played great, because till the 25th or 26th minute, when the red card, when Araujo was sent off, till then it was quite evenly matched. You may even say that Barcelona had a slightly upper hand till then. But, you know, that was kind of the turning point, and that has kind of ruined their season. Because you look at Barcelona's season, this was a phase where you really felt that, okay, they're coming along as a team. They're finally, you know, getting those results, playing really well under Xavi. And, I mean, it just took one moment of madness to kind of ruin their entire season.
Yeah,
exactly. I remember watching this, and as soon as that red card went in, I thought like, oh, like this is basically over. And then in the second half, where, if I remember correctly, Vitinha got the goal, and then Xavi responded by like kicking something over and getting sent off. And then his second in command got sent off, I think about 5 minutes later, for arguing with the referee over something. And when you see, not just, like, it's one thing for a player to be sent off, but it's another for a manager and then his assistant. And it really did feel like this is a club that is hanging on by the skin of its teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And when one mistake happens, it all just falls like dominoes. And that's, I think Barga's right there, where I say, like, that makes me think that this result, it kind of flatters to deceive. And that the reality is that what we saw was more of a PSG collapse than a Barcelona collapse than a PSG win. The one thing that I will say as well is that Luis Enrique said he hasn't been playing Mbappe in Ligue 1, so the team will get used to him not being there. But then when he plays him in the Champions League, he's like integral to the squad. He's involved in so many things. And then he got those last two goals. I mean, yeah, one of them was a penalty, and one of them came about because obviously Barcelona are playing with 10 men. They're stretched. It's like 2 minutes left to go. But you have a guy who is on his way out. You've already tried to diminish him. Then in a game like this, he proves to still be your main guy. I feel like that's a sign that PSG, while they are, I think, better having offloaded Neymar and Messi, and they're not so front-loaded with that three, especially when you have Dembele out on the right. Like, Dembele, Hakimi, and Marquinhos at that right side, just destroying it back and forth all night. But still having Mbappe in the star position, it's like you're setting yourself up for failure. Unless they can get a real solid number nine in the transfer window, I think it's going to look like a team that's missing its cutting edge next year.
Yeah, that's true. But Mbappe now has scored the second most goals of all players against Barcelona, I read. When he goes to Real next season, he's going to continue probably match that record and have it for himself. For Dembele, Dembele used to play for Barcelona, and it didn't work out. They basically sent him away to both because it didn't work and to make up for their financial losses. And now Dembele was playing much better than he did in Barcelona in PSG. I know he's not good enough to, say, play all the absence left by Mbappe, but do you think he can handle a bigger role next season for PSG or in the future?
Well, he plays in a very different position and a different style. He's a lot more of a winger, whereas Mbappe is like a classic forward. But I feel like he can definitely be almost like, what we were saying previously, like Bukayo Saka is just like integral to Arsenal's attack. I get the feeling that with PSG, everything's been very central for the past few seasons, especially when it was Neymar and Mbappe is like a two up front. I feel like Dembele is going to be crucial to the attack, but they're going to have someone else who can get on the end of it as well.
True.
Plus, I think, I mean, the reason we're seeing, Dembele do a bit better and at PSG is because I feel he is currently in like a friendlier setting than he was at Barcelona. When you go to Barcelona and they pay 100 million odd for you as a 19, 20-year-old,
mm-hmm.
It's not easy to, you know, step into a role like that. And, you know, especially with such huge expectations, the Spanish press can be brutal sometimes. So, and especially at a club like Barcelona, where you kind of knew the club was never really financially in a good health for the last few years. And there was, of course, a lot of pressure and there was a situation developing with Messi and his contract. So to, you know, to have such huge pressure on your shoulders at such a young age, it was not really easy for him to flourish. And I think that kind of pressure has been reduced to some extent by going to PSG. It's, it hasn't had to adapt to a new culture or a language. So I think the surroundings are slightly friendlier and that should help him do better and maybe he can get a more prominent role. But yeah, as Josh said, they definitely need more players to, replace someone like Mbappe.
Yeah, that's true. So for the final game of the four, Borussia Dortmund and Atletico Madrid. Josh, you remember we used to say that for Borussia Dortmund, it's the similar pattern every season. They were competing with Bayern Munich, sometimes neck and neck, sometimes by a bigger margin in the Bundesliga, and then they were advancing in the Champions League. But suddenly, they lost there or they lost here, so they stopped one in order to play better in the other race. And this time, the Bundesliga was not necessarily about Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Bayern Munich. It's mm-hmm. about Bayern Munich and Leverkusen. So for in the Champions League, they now maybe have less pressure and a much smaller distraction, so they can perform better. They can focus on the Champions League. Is that why they're now in the semifinals again?
I think so, because there's been definitely this idea with them, especially after last season when they got to the final day, then blew it, that they have a problem with, I don't know how you'd phrase it, maybe focus, maybe confidence, whatever it is. And this season, Leverkusen has just romped through everything. It's kind of, like you say, taken away the focus and it's allowed them to play a little bit better. We saw them getting that win in the Allianz against Bayern in the Clásico, like I referenced previously. It's the first one there in, I want to say, at least 5, 6, 7 years. Definitely the last one since Klopp was there. Mm-hmm. So you have this team that's always been second best, always been living in the shadow, now becoming almost freed by being third best with Leverkusen storming ahead. And while they are still competing with Leipzig in the Bundesliga to guarantee that they get a place next year in the Champions League, whether that happens or not, I don't know, because the coefficient has probably swung their way and it's going to be five spots. Either way, I can see them looking at this now as just like the one thing they really have to play for, the one thing to really focus on. And we saw that in this game where this would be, like, obviously 4-2, specifically going 2-0 up, then having an equal out by the 60th minute. It's not the best. But you get the feeling that, like, a Dortmund team in a previous season wouldn't have been able to come back from it. It would have been 2-0 up, then 2-1, 2-2, then maybe 2-3, and they would have lost it. Whereas this time around, they kept their heads. Füllkrug and Sabitzer were able to turn things around quite late on and keep them alive going into the next round. And as for Atletico Madrid, I like how they have become a much more attacking force, but you still get this feeling that either way, maybe because some of the players have just been there for so long, Koke, Llorente, Riquelme, Son Niguez, they've been there for so long, they can't really fit into this new style that Diego Simeone wants. And once they got the equalizer, I wouldn't say they stopped playing, but they definitely lost the urge to go ahead and win. It was almost as if they were selling back into their old routine and pressing for penalties or something. So I feel like one team we've seen changes focus going to the ascendancy, and another team which is a few cycles back, you could say, which needs to be completely reborn.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, as Josh said, I mean, you saw the way they reacted to conceding those goals. And I mean, I've said this before about Atletico. They can be, especially in games like this, big away games in the Champions League, they can be extremely reactive. And I mean, the first half an hour was fine. But, you know, once they conceded a goal, then again, their approach was like, okay, let's just wait and see. And they almost immediately conceded another. And that's when their approach kind of changed. They managed to get those two goals. And once they got those two goals again, they were like, let's, you know, try and slow this down. That doesn't always, you know, you can slow things down, but things don't always go your way, especially in games like this when you have like 80,000 odd fans as well who are, you know, cheering against you. And the team that you are playing for has good options, that good tactical flexibility. Sapitzer, I think, was the best player on the field that night, really managed to, you know, completely dominate the Atletico midfield. And without him, probably would have been a different game. But again, I mean, Atletico have got to blame themselves in the way they react to situations like this. And we saw at the beginning of the game when Morata had the chance on a break. It's not like they cannot create those chances, but they can be very reactive, you know, and that can slow things down against your favor. It doesn't necessarily work out in your favor, especially, you know, if the team, if the opposition team managed to score a goal or two. Things can completely change. And both those phases where Dortmund scored were like within three or 4 minutes in the first half. I think it was a 4 or 5 minute phase where they got those two goals. And again, in the second half, like a 3 or 4 minute phase where they got those couple of goals. And I feel they were okay. I mean, I can't really find too many areas to blame them on in terms of the other, if you look at the rest of the game. But again, those couple of moments, those couple of phases where, you know, they kind of were unable to stop the Dortmund front line. Witzel, for example, he was so slow at times. I mean, it was just a complete mismatch in midfield. And Dortmund really managed to, you know, target Atletico's very specific weaknesses. And again, by being so reactive, they allowed Dortmund to kind of expose their weaknesses. And I feel Morata at times was very isolated. He did get some touches, but again, he didn't really manage to get those runs. They were hoping to, you know, get him up front on some counter attacks, but that didn't really happen. I think Dortmund, especially after in the last 15 minutes, they managed to kind of calm things down and not allow too many openings. Sabitzer for me was the man of the match, and Atletico again too reactive and too slow at times.
That's true. I mean, for me to watch it, Atletico, they've been working hard and they did well trying to develop a new style, like what John said, they're trying to become an attacking team, but sometimes their old habits just keep biting, especially in clutch moments like this, and that's something they have to work on in the future. And I think that's all for today. Thank you for listening. Hopefully we'll be hearing from you guys very soon next week. See ya.
Thank you.
Speak to you then. Bye-bye.